The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. First of all, a hearty and a little tov to you and your family on the wonderful occasion of the wedding, which I believe will be tomorrow. And obviously, we won't have a chance to speak to you before then. So I hope that Lag BaOmer for you guys will be very, very festive and filled with simcha.
Thank you, Anthony. So what advice would you have wanted someone to give you ahead of your marriage?
Well, I was thinking about that, Howard, and I just wonder whether somebody who's getting married actually wants to receive any advice at all.
No, normally the grooms stand up and they give us advice, you know, because...
Well, that's the way things are these days, right?
It's true.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. The truth of the matter is that whatever advice one tries to give often just flies straight over the head of the person who it's intended for. And ultimately, the best advice that I have received is the advice that I've given myself and experienced over the years, things that I've just come across. Because, you know, advice that you receive from others is somehow less valuable than advice that you pick up yourself along the way through pure hard work and trial and error. But I think that for me, the best thing for me has just been to take every day as it comes and not to try to somehow pre-plan too far in advance. Think about how life will take you, you know, not to have those huge plans away ahead of time. Just take every day as it comes and just try and, you know, navigate through it and learn lessons as you go along, because those lessons are so valuable.
Absolutely, absolutely right. Okay, let's talk about what's happening in Israel.
Yeah, there's so many things going on.
There are so many. The IDF is currently in the midst of this extensive training exercise, and it's in fact the largest training exercise in Israeli history. Tell us about this.
Well, it is the largest training exercise in Israeli history, and we've spoken a little bit about it. The so-called Chariots of Fire exercise that is already in place and taking place as we speak at the moment. The thing that I wanted to talk about, which is fascinating, is the announcement by the IDF that the U.S. Forces will actually also be involved in taking part in this Chariots of Fire military exercise. And the part of the U.S. Forces that will be involved are the refuelers from the U.S. Air Force. And we understand that there will be collaboration involving Israeli fighter jets and these American refuelers, because Israel will simulate an attack on Iranian military and also nuclear installations, particularly focused, of course, on the nuclear facilities. And as we understand it, dozens of Israeli fighter jets will be involved in this exercise alongside these U.S. refueling aircraft. And the idea is to try to simulate a refueling, or maybe even carry out a real-time refueling exercise between the U.S. refueler aircraft and the Israeli fighter jets, obviously in order to enable Israeli fighter jets to reach Iran to carry out any planned attack and to return back to Israel without the need to refuel along the way. Or they will refuel, but they obviously refuel in flight because the distance is such that the refueling is required. And this is a very interesting development, because the last time that Israel carried out a major drill for an attack on Iran like this was as much as 10 years ago. I hadn't realized that it has already been 10 years since the IDF, and in particular the Israeli Air Force, has carried out a drill like this, which simulates an attack on the Israeli, on the Iranian nuclear facilities. And at that time, we understand, or at least according to the reports, there was a real intention of carrying out some sort of an attack when that exercise was carried out 10 years ago. So I don't know what we can read into the current situation and whether there's any similarity that can be drawn between what was then 10 years ago and what will be happening now, and the fact that now, quite late in the day, it's been announced that these U.S. refuelers will also take part in the exercise Chariots of Fire, which is ongoing. But obviously, we know that things with Iran are very tense. And it's interesting how those discussions between the U.S. and the P5+1 group with Iran, the negotiations that were taking place in Vienna, have kind of dissipated. Nothing is being said about it at the moment.
It's so true.
No agreement was reached.
Unbelievable.
No agreement was reached for the U.S. to rejoin that agreement. And it's just kind of gone away as far as the press is concerned. Now, I don't know whether that's because Ukraine has overtaken the headlines and therefore this has become less newsworthy, or whether there's just simply nothing to report. I strongly suspect that it is the second rather than the first, even though, of course, the war in Ukraine has certainly helped to take other items off the front pages. But it's interesting that the US is now cooperating with Israel militarily, and those talks seem to have gone away. So, you know, you guys can all jump to your own conclusions about what all of this really means.
That is interesting that that we haven't heard anything, that no agreement was reached, and that now the US is involved in this joint operation. Very, very concerning on some level as well. Hezbollah looks to lose its parliamentary majority in Lebanon after elections were held over the weekend. That is quite significant, isn't it?
Well, I think it is quite significant. I mean, the Lebanese parliament is constructed of 128 seats. And in the previous parliament, Hezbollah and its allies, because like Israel, Lebanon is very much split into numerous different parties. So the Hezbollah faction had more than 70 seats of the 128 that are available, with a strong majority. And now it seems, as a result of the elections which were held on Sunday, that Hezbollah will be getting 60 or even less seats as part of its participation in the next Lebanese parliament. And, you know, we're trying to understand what the significance of this might be in terms of Israel's relationship or lack of relationship with Lebanon, which is the current case. Of course, Israel doesn't have any diplomatic relations with Lebanon. And on the contrary, Israel has something of a conflict situation with Lebanon, although it's very interesting to try to dissect the relationship that Israel has with Lebanon, because the relationship with the Lebanese civilians is not an issue. And it's interesting that it kind of mirrors the relationship that Israel has with Iran, for example. No issues with the individuals, with the citizens of Iran. In fact, on the contrary, would we quite like to be friendly with them. And we have, you know, Farsi news programs and radio programs that we broadcast in order to try to communicate with them. And the same is true of the civilians, the regular citizens in Lebanon. No issue with them. The issue that we have, of course, is with Hezbollah, which is, of course, a very, very highly militarized force in Lebanon, supported by Iran, and as we now know, also having controlled the Lebanese parliament up until now. So the question is, now that Hezbollah will not be controlling the Lebanese parliament, is there a possible way that Israel might be able to engineer a relationship with the new Lebanese government that comes in, given that it won't be Hezbollah controlled? Or maybe it will be, even though Hezbollah has a minority situation. Maybe they are still strong enough to control the makeup of the next government, given the fact that it's so dissipated in terms of the representation in the parliament. But of course, we can't ignore the fact that this is the first election that has been held since those dreadful that dreadful explosion that took place in the Beirut port.
I was wondering about that. Did that impact? You know, there was a lot of corruption exposed and weakness in government exposed over that time. It was the first time we had really seen it in the international press, talking about Hezbollah and how frail and corrupt government is. I would imagine it made a bit of a difference.
Well, it goes even further than that, because not only did we have that Beirut port blast, which took place in 2020, but also Lebanon has been through a massive economic meltdown that the World Bank has publicly blamed on the ruling classes in Lebanon. So this has really been blamed fairly and squarely on the government in Lebanon. And the individual citizens, people who have the right to vote, I don't know how free and fair the vote is, but nonetheless, the vote, I think, has certainly reflected the fact that the regular man in the street in Lebanon is not well pleased with the events in recent years and has decided to vote with his feet and to make a change to the makeup of the parliament. I think that in reality, Hezbollah will continue to be very, very dominant in the next Lebanese parliament. Not only do they have the majority from a minority situation where there's such dissipation between the representation in the parliament, but also clearly militarily. They have such a massive influence over things in Lebanon, particularly in the southern part of Lebanon, and the Iranian influence can't be underestimated. So all in all, I think that Hezbollah will continue probably to have a very, very strong influence, if not control, over the next Lebanese government. But it is very fascinating to see that this massive change has taken place in the election, and people are definitely voting against Hezbollah in view of the recent events that have taken place in Lebanon.
It's a huge move. It really, really is a very big difference. And let's hope it can lead to a decent relationship between the two countries, something that is so, so important. Lagba Omer begins tonight. Many eyes are trained, of course, on the events at Mount Meron. What is the plan for Meron this year, considering what happened last year?
Well, Lagba Omer this year is going to be different, not only for the Feldman family, but indeed for many people in Israel, because let's start with the simple things. Lagba Omer traditionally has been, let's light bonfires, let's have a kumzitz, nice and social around the bonfire. That has really been tradition for Lagba Omer for many years. And in fact, it's been a done thing that schools and classes get together on the night of Lagba Omer and have some sort of a group activity. Parents get involved, that obviously creates three main problems. The first problem is the theft of wood that goes on around Israel, around Lagba Omer, as people prepare for the bonfire. Every building site, wood, any piece of wood, any old furniture, anything gets collected up. You see kids walking in the streets with supermarket trolleys laden with wood that they're stashing away, ready for their Lagba Omer bonfire. That has been the tradition in Israel up until now. Also, of course, lots and lots of injuries surrounding the Lagba Omer fire, whether it is just people getting splinters from the wood that they're putting on the fire, or burns, or other issues that go on over Lagba Omer. And of course, the third main issue from the bonfire culture has been the pollution that we experience, which has been massive over Lagba Omer. And in fact, this has been quite well known, that for people who are flying over Israel in aeroplanes over Lagba Omer, you can literally see the country practically alight as all the bonfires are lit across Israel. So this year, and slowly but surely over the past years, but particularly this year, the authorities have encouraged people not to light fires on Lagba Omer. That is now the message that is being sent loud and clear. Lagba Omer is not for bonfire lighting any longer. And hopefully, by encouraging people not to light bonfires, we will somehow manage to avoid the issues that have been experienced over the past few years. And to be honest, I have seen it anecdotally, or missed it anecdotally, because I don't see the kids walking around in the streets, and I haven't seen them for the past few days as I would have expected to see, with their piles of wood stashing it away for the bonfire. So this year we're expecting not to see bonfires in Lagba Omer, and instead the local authorities have tried to plan alternative Lagba Omer parties. For example, my municipality has a municipal pool, and they're going to hold a massive party, a pool party for Lagba Omer as an alternative to the bonfire. So it's still going to be quite social, but people are going to be gathering in a slightly different way. Now, let's talk a little bit about Mount Meron, and of course the fact that last year this time 45 people were killed in that crowd crush due to a variety of different issues that happened to take place at the same time. First of all, the infrastructure. Let's just start with saying that people like to visit Mount Meron on Lagba Omer because, of course, it is the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is credited with writing the Zohar, and whose death is commemorated at the time of Lagba Omer. And it is traditional for tens of thousands of people to gather at Mount Meron in order to visit the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And it's also traditional for three-year-old boys to get their haircut, their first haircut, on Lagba Omer at Mount Meron, which is quite traditional. So this has always attracted huge crowds of people, and of course last year resulted in that massive tragedy that we can't forget, the biggest civilian tragedy, the biggest loss of civilian life in Israel's history took place last year at Mount Meron. This year things will be different. First of all, the infrastructure has been upgraded massively. So those bridges that really couldn't hold the number of people that were expected to cross them have now all been upgraded and strengthened, and passageways have been widened. And the entire infrastructure that surrounds the visit to the gravesite of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has been massively upgraded over the last year. Second of all, nobody can come to Mount Meron without a ticket this year. You have to have a ticket, and the ticket involves transportation to the site as well as entry to the site. And the number of tickets that have been issued have been limited. No more than 4,000 people per hour will be let in, and each ticket will give you access to the site for 4 hours, which means that the site will be limited at any one time to up to 16,000 people, which it is believed the site will be able to cope with under the current circumstances. So let's hope that these changes that have been made to the arrangements at Har Meron will result in people being able to visit in a normal, organized fashion, and of course will secure the safety of people as they come along to celebrate and not to mourn on Lag BaOmer.
Was there ever a final finding of the investigation? Because there was a lot of talk around that, obviously, at the time.
Well, there were some investigations that were conducted, and I don't know that their findings were officially published, but what we see spoken about in the press is that really the reason why the tragedy happened was for a variety of different reasons. First of all, the whole organization and the attempt to try to control access to the site by certain interest groups was all highly criticized. The place was not properly maintained, was never designed to hold the number of people that were ultimately there. And in fact, this wasn't a first-time thing. The fact that the tragedy only happened last year was a miracle, because this tragedy could have happened in any of the preceding years, given the way in which events were conducted, the number of people who were there, and the lack of maintenance and the lack of organization at the site. The Israeli police also were blamed to some degree for having authorized the fact that so many people were on the site without any control. So I think that the blame was kind of spread out. Whoever was involved in that particular event seems to have to bear some responsibility for what went on. But apparently this year, none of that is going on. And interestingly, one bonfire lighting ceremony will be held tonight, and food will not be sold at all at Har Meron. So if you want to drink or eat while you are there, it's kind of bring your own, because there will not be no food sold. So these are some of the arrangements that have been made in order to try to prevent what happened last year. And let's hope that if you're going to be celebrating Lag BaOmer this year, that it will be safe for you, and that you'll enjoy a nice, a good social occasion safely. We'll talk a little bit tomorrow with Kathy about Lag BaOmer in Israel.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, I'll catch you on Monday morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.